Can public policy override the Constitution? Find out next on Principles and Policies. Hello, I'm your host today, Chuck Michaelis, the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy and the Executive Director of Camp American. Well, my usual co-host, Barry Sheets, is still on a business trip, and we are giving him a few days off to do the things that he does well. He's off representing a client in Washington, D.C., and we are saying prayers for his safety on his safe return, because tomorrow, Saturday the 16th of June, 2012, Barry and I are going to be meeting with a group of fellow constitutional teachers and our students, and we're going to be having a graduation ceremony that's to be held in Kettering, Ohio. Ricky Pepin, who we've interviewed on this program, always arranges these things. This is a great opportunity for those of you who haven't taken one of our Constitution courses to go online and look into taking one of our classes so that you too can go through this graduation ceremony and get a certificate of achievement and all those things. But one of the things that you also get with the graduation ceremony is a free added class. You get a 3-hour instruction on the rights and responsibilities of a fully informed juror. This is a great class taught by David Whitney, who is the head instructor for the Institute on the Constitution, the group that sponsors the class that we take. They provide us all the materials. And let me tell you, the class on the jury is fantastic. I have seen a longer version of it at Camp American. We've actually had Pastor Whitney come out and teach that class at Camp American. And I can tell you, it's a very good class, and it helped me out because I was foreman on a jury after I took that class. Now, I had already understood the basics of most everything that we were taught, but it really was helpful to have had that class and know the rights and responsibilities of a fully informed juryman. And you can do that too. Again, you take our 12-week course, make sure you attend 10 classes, and you will be eligible to graduate. We are graduating something like 10 people, I think, on the latest class that was started by a friend of the Institute for Principled Policy, a fellow by the name of Bob Garby, who unfortunately 4 weeks into the class had a heart attack and died. And as a tribute to Bob, I went ahead and finished his class. I was very honored to be allowed to finish his class, and we are graduating most of the students that started the class with him, and that's a tribute to Bob, because Bob was just a wonderful man, a wonderful Christian, a wonderful scientist. A lot of people don't know that, except those who have gone to church with Bob or used to know his show here on local cable TV. Bob, that's where I first became aware of Bob Garby. He had a TV show called Alpha Nova, and it ran on local cable. Unfortunately, it ran very close to a couple of guys who basically messed up local cable for everybody else by just running hallucinogenic nonsense and foul language and sex jokes and all kinds of stuff. So those kind of guys really messed up local cable for everybody. But Bob actually had a studio in his house, and he would make these programs. Bob was an advocate of intelligent design, and he was a creationist. There's no doubt about that. Bob is just a wonderful guy, and this show isn't about Bob, but I just want you to know that he was a marvelous man, and I was truly honored to be allowed to finish his class for him. So tomorrow we're going to be graduating, oh gosh, probably over 100 students. I know Ricky Pepin and her group over in the Dayton area, Western Ohio, and then Barry Sheets is graduating a class, and I'm graduating a class, so altogether we're over 100 people. That being said, we're going to talk today about what we talked about yesterday, and that is this idea that somehow the Indiana Supreme Court negated 12 or 1400 years worth of common law by throwing out the Magna Carta. Now, is the Magna Carta in American law? No, it's not, but it is codified in our Constitution. You have to remember that you can't look at the United States Constitution as this marvelous document that simply sprung from the head of these geniuses and nothing came before it and had no previous predecessors. Well, that's nonsense. Constitution grew out of the English common law, and that goes back at least to the 800s. So we are looking at ways of thinking about personal rights that go back, really codified, over 1,000 years. And before that, you can find them really codified in the Bible. And that's the entire point. When you hear that the Constitution isn't a Christian document, well, okay, it's not explicitly a Christian document, and I wouldn't like to see it included in a Bible. But the Bible was the basis of the Constitution, even as much as the common law was. Well, what are we talking about? Well, in May of 2011, in a case called Barnes versus State of Indiana, the Indiana Supreme Court issued in a 3-2 decision, another one of those split decisions, in a 3-2 decision, that the common law right to reasonably resist unlawful entry by police officers was negated. And in fact, their decision basically said that it was negated because there is no reasonable right to resist unlawful entry by police officers because of public policy. Well, ladies and gentlemen, public policy is something that is adopted by administrations who run cities, counties, states, and nations based on the nation's laws that themselves are not necessarily codified into law. In other words, someone who is head of some agency or some department will say, this is the way we're going to run things. This is our stated policy. So a non-legislated policy, the policy of an administrator, someone who isn't even necessarily elected. Sometimes these administrators, like for instance, chiefs of police and those kinds of things, chiefs of police are not generally elected. I can't think of any place where I've heard of a chief of police that was elected. A chief of police will simply issue a policy that their police officers can enter a home under any circumstances if they suspect spitting on the sidewalk, for instance, or any kind of a crime being committed or any potential crime being committed. And that's exactly what the Indiana Supreme Court came down and said in a 3-2, a very close split decision. Remember, one vote could very easily have changed this. They came out with this decision that said public policy trumps the United States Constitution and trumps 12 or 1400 years of the common law, understanding that a man's home is his castle and he has the right to protect it from an unlawful invasion. In this case, there was a man named Barnes, and he was involved, again, one of these cases that police hate. I understand why, because most stuff that happens to cops happens on these cases. He was involved in a domestic dispute with his wife. When police tried to gain entry into the house, they asked if they could enter the house, and Barnes refused, blocking the doorway. That's his legal right to do so. The police entered anyway, and Barnes, quote-unquote, shoved an officer against the wall. The officers used a taser on him and arrested him. Now, here's what's interesting about this case that makes it really, really questionable. There were never any charges regarding the domestic violence that the police came to investigate. Never. So, in other words, the police forced their way into this man's house, denied him the right to resist their entry, tasered him, arrested him, charged him with misdemeanor battery against a police officer, resisting law enforcement, and disorderly conduct. Disorderly conduct is a catch-all when they can't think of something else to charge you with. Unfortunately, when the police need to protect themselves, they'll charge you with disorderly conduct, and they'll all get together and swear that you did it. Now, not all of them. I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. There are honest police officers out there. There are lots of them. But don't kid yourself. This is a way that the club protects itself. Disorderly conduct. Almost a meaningless charge. Basically, the trial judge denied Barnes' proffer jury instruction, and this is through his attorney. Now, I'm reading from a blog of a law professor, Jonathan Turley, and this is a guest blogger by the name of David Drum, who goes by the nickname Nal. And he says, this was the proffer jury instruction. When an arrest is attempted by means of a forceful and unlawful entry into a citizen's home, such entry represents the use of excessive force, and the arrest cannot be considered peaceable. Therefore, a citizen has the right to reasonably resist the unlawful entry. Now, there was an appeal filed because he was found guilty by a jury, and he appealed on the basis that his jury instruction was not accepted. Barnes appealed, claiming that his tendered jury instruction should have been given because it was a correct statement of the viable legal defense. The Indiana Supreme Court ruled that the trial judge was not in error. This is where things go wrong, ladies and gentlemen. Minor cases. This is a nothing case. But what this Indiana Supreme Court did was unartfully find, using this phrase, this is from the majority opinion. We believe, however, that a right to resist an unlawful police entry into a home is against public policy and is incompatible with modern Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. Okay, there is so much wrong in that decision that it's beyond frightening, because what it says is that law is not anchored in concrete concepts. It's anchored in an evolutionary understanding and evolving standards of law. In other words, the law is what the judges say it is when they say it is. They're saying that the Fourth Amendment doesn't really mean what it says. Now, I'm going to read to the Fourth Amendment really quick. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. In other words, you have to have a clear and overarching knowledge of crime being committed, and you have to be able to prove it within reasonable guidelines. And see, there's the problem. We have an evolving standard of what reasonable is. For instance, if an officer smells meth cooking in a hallway, he's got a pretty good idea that there's meth being cooked somewhere, and if he can smell it coming out from one door, there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to get a search warrant and enter legally. He doesn't need to kick the door down. He doesn't need to go smashing in unannounced. He's got all the evidence he needs for a warrant. He simply goes outside, calls in a warrant, and when the drug squad arrives, they go in and arrest the perpetrator. That is a reasonable search. An unreasonable search is being pulled over and for no reason, no speeding, no light out, no illegal left turn, no nothing. Simply being pulled over. I'd like to take a look in your trunk. Why? Because I want to look in it. That is an unreasonable search. I want to enter your home. Why? Because I have a suspicion that you might be looking at pornography on your computer. Well, I'm sorry, that's not a reasonable search. Now, if you can prove that someone has been looking through legal means by doing a search warrant and noticing traffic of, for instance, child pornography, that kind of thing, then okay. That is a reasonable search. But if somebody just wants to come in and check your records, that is not a reasonable search. Now, the dissenting opinion showed that the two dissenting judges knew what they were doing. Here is from the dissent. Quote, "In my view, it is breathtaking that the majority deems it appropriate or even necessary to erode this constitutional protection based on a rationale addressing much different policy considerations. There is simply no reason to abrogate the common law right of a citizen to resist the unlawful police entry into his or her home." And further down in the opinion, it says, "In my view, the majority sweeps with far too broad a brush by essentially telling Indiana citizens that government agents may now enter their homes illegally, that is, without the necessity of a warrant, consent, or exigent circumstances." Now, an exigent circumstance is something that warrants their entry into the home. In other words, they can see someone is all bloody. If they come to the door and they can see someone's all bloody, that's an exigent circumstance. At that point, they can enter your home. There is a higher standard at that point. They have noticed that someone has either been beaten or there's been a physical altercation or something, and therefore they can enter your home. Basically, the dissent also noted a respectable argument could be made that police response to a report of domestic violence is an exigent circumstance justifying entry into a home without a search warrant. However, remember, in this case, no domestic violence charges were filed, and so that exigent circumstance is meaningless because there was no exigent circumstance. They found no evidence of domestic abuse. So therefore, this guy had his rights violated. He had his home violated. He himself was falsely arrested, tasered, hauled off to the police station, charged with a crime, in order really for the policemen to protect their own names rather than to protect anyone in the home. They had to protect their own reputation and power. And that's really the bottom line here, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we're talking about. This was a problem in the American colonies, and it's one of the reasons that the Fourth Amendment is written into the United States Constitution. One of the major complaints in the colonies was that the major tenets of the British Bill of Rights and the Magna Carta were being violated, and the colonists did not want to have those rights violated. They wanted to have the same rights as Englishmen and had the right to claim that. Now, once again, unfortunately, we're out of time, but just remember that Indiana's action in passing this law that we've been talking about yesterday and today, that is that a homeowner has the right to protect himself from an unlawful entry by force if necessary, was only made necessary because the Indiana Supreme Court, in a Nothingburger case, made an extremely bad decision. This is what happens, ladies and gentlemen, when courts get out of hand and begin thinking of themselves as lawmakers rather than enforcement officials. That being said, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.